Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. We're definitely going to talk about Beverly Hills Cop Axel F. Because we did both get to watch that. We didn't get to record last week because I got sick and my dog got sick. And it just turned into a rough weekend.
Trust me, I had my own stuff. So yeah, guys, it was just better that you didn't record. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and I had a minor freak out. Like, I didn't text you, but like a friend of mine was like, hey, you know, Parvo's really bad right now. Like, do you think she has Parvo? Man. And I was like, what? Like, where would she have gotten Parvo?
Yeah, like, thank you for telling me that. Even though, like, she's never around dogs, like, she's not, like, she's only distanced away from certain dogs. Thank you for telling me that.
Yeah, it turned into a whole, like, well, I mean, they can get it from dog parks. I'm like, the dog park we go to, there's never any other dogs at, like, rarely is there another dog. And, like, it just, I went down this rabbit hole of, like, how contagious is it? Like, so like for, there was like a 24-hour period where I was like, she might have Parvo. And then, cause like she wasn't eating, she wasn't drinking any water. And, really what I think happened is I accidentally washed this stuffed bear that she loves to like chew on, basically.
Chew on, yeah.
I think it didn't get completely washed out, and it probably made her a little sick. So, she's absolutely better now, like pretty much back to her old self. And so like crisis averted, but I was just like, my dog's going to die. Like, what am I going to do? Like, what's going on? It's probably worse that I accidentally minorly possibly poisoned the dog. But like I didn't even know the bear was, like, I have a bad habit of like leaving my clothes on the floor. Single life, you know, and he's like, well, I'll pick them up and put them in the hamper later. And even with Ripley, I haven't gotten used to it, knowing that she will steal my socks, steal my underwear, she'll steal all my clothes. Yeah. And then just drag them somewhere else.
So she can spit down, like, she can have your, like, dogs do it because they their masters are their everything, or their humans are their everything. So, you know, she's doing it because she wants to have your scent next to her. Yeah. Especially during the off hours, you know?
Yeah. So somehow she had like piled up. Either put her bear with my clothes or put my clothes with her bear. And so when I scooped them up, they all went in the laundry. And so the bear got washed too. So, but anyway, you know, I've no proof of that, but like when I found it, with the clothes, I just, threw it back in her pile of toys. And I thought about it like 2 or 3 days later. I was like, what could she have eaten? Because like I've been real careful about like her sticking her nose in places when we go walk, because it's summer and there's a lot of creatures out and she's fond of trying to eat anything that she thinks might be food. So I was like, I haven't given her anything. I haven't. And then eventually, like one of those like thoughts that wakes you up when you're like half asleep.
And you're yes.
Like, oh God, her bear. Like I watched her bear. So, oh, and she loves, she will just put that thing in. Like, you've seen, like, German Shepherds do it, right? Like, they have that thing that they just, like, salivate into and just, like, gnaw at, but never, like, rip into. And that's what she does with this little stuffed bear. She's, like, gets its head in her mouth, and she's just, like, arr, 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 arr. Anyway, long story short, Ripley's fine now. She's a little hot, but hopefully we'll get a haircut soon. So, anyway, we both watch Axel F. We're going to talk about that. I've watched a few more things, but before we get into anything, we were both just talking about a star from our childhood passed away yesterday, Shannon Doherty, who a lot of people, I mean, me and you included, like, it's Beverly Hills 90210 was like, I mean, it was a juggernaut when we were in, like, what, junior high, high school?
Yeah, it was junior high to high school. Like, I still remember, like, I think it was, like, seventh grade when 90210 for me hit. So it would have been sixth grade for you. So, like, and then it stayed relevant, like, until, like, at least high school. Like, I think that it was, like 6 or 7 years where it was, like, super, like, it was, like, the thing, right? Like, everybody watched it, like, that was in junior high and high school. Like, we knew these characters inside and out. It's wild. Like, it's, like, we say from our childhood, but, like, the weirdest part about this is that, like, Lou Perry, she was, like, barely in her 50s when she passed. Yeah. Like, literally, she's 53, losing to cancer. You know, it's just, like, it's wild to think that an icon from my childhood is just, like, I mean, she was an icon. Brenda was an icon. I mean, like, we don't talk about it, but it's, like, she was so much of an icon. She rooted so much jealousy within women that, like, they, like, them and the press kind of labeled her this, like, difficult, I hate to use the word, but, like, bitch, and, like, made it, like, a big fucking thing, like, so much so that, like, there was, like, all this brouhaha. I mean, we all know the stories from Mallrats, but also, like, what we don't realize is that she was, like, what, 23 or 24 at the time, and having to deal with, like, I don't think that people truly realize and recognize, like, the kind of stardom that she and this cast had. Like, it felt like it was the first time that a 20-something cast, even though they were supposed to be playing teenagers, were, like, a big deal. Like, they were all, like, they were pre-Friends, right? Like, they were the people that were before Friends, and, like, you couldn't get away from it. Like, everything, MTV, like, People Magazine, like, Entertainment Tonight, every day had something about these kids or these guys. Yeah. And, I mean, like, I hate the fact that she was labeled that, because she's so fucking good. Like, you watch 90210, and especially Charmed. Like, you watch Charmed, and it's like, wow, like, that's, like, literally, she's, like, Charmed is a, like, you know, a lot of people think that Charmed is a silly show, but it's actually a really, really great show that showcased three women and consistently told women's stories, like, and had women adventures, right? Like, everybody wants to talk about Buffy, but nobody wants to talk about Charmed, which I always find, like, weirdly hilarious, because, like, they occupy the same space. They just did it a little bit differently. And, like, somewhere in the middle, like, Eric Kripke kind of stole from both of them for Supernatural. Yeah. Like literally, but then just made it about two boys. And, but, like, no, like, you know, everybody loves Buffy and gives it its kudos and stuff and its roses. But I feel like nobody has really given Shannon Doherty, Elizabeth, or Alyssa Milano, and Holly Marie Combs their flowers for, like, making a really great show. I didn't want. Did you watch the reboot? Because I know there's a reboot, right?
No, I really only watched Charmed like here and there.
Okay,
when it was on, it was never like it was in my atmosphere, but never like one of the things that I was like hooked to. Like Buffy, like I was like that with Buffy too.
Okay,
but for me, she was like Mallrats was it. For me,
was the
yeah, like that was like she will always be that character to me. The show Riverdale did a really sweet thing when so Luke Perry was on Riverdale. He played Archie's dad on Riverdale, and when he suddenly passed away, they had to fortunately for the show. It was in between like filming schedules so that they could kind of like take their time and how they address it. And they started out that next season with Archie having to deal with the death of his dad. And what had happened was he had been in the show, he stopped to help a stranded motorist and was hit by a car, like a hit and run.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. And so that way they could do, you know, it wouldn't have to be like, oh, he was sick and nobody knew it. Like, it could address the suddenness of it without having to be, you know, super, like, you know, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They can control the narrative. Yeah.
At some point, like, Archie goes to talk. I don't really remember how it plays out. Or the woman that he stopped to save comes to his funeral, I think. And it's Shannon Doherty. It's the stranded motorist that Archie's dad stopped to save. So you get this kind of sweet, like, callback to Dylan and Brenda, like, that whole relationship. And it's just, it's really sad to think now that they both passed away from just shit, you know?
Yeah.
Not being like young and dumb or like the consequences of being young and dumb at one point, you know, it's just bullshit. Like it's just, Not even, you know, oh, she was 85 and died from years long battle with cancer. No, she was barely in her 50s, and Luke Perry's was like an aneurysm, if I remember right.
Yes, yeah, that's what it was. Like, I'm fairly certain I'm going to look that up right now. But like both of them just kind of like taken from us way too early, way too early. Like, he was 52.
Yeah.
He was 52 when he passed.
And it's so weird to think about, like, watch, like, if you try to watch 90210 now, it's like, these are kids in their late 20s pretending to be kids in their early teens.
Yes.
Or mid to late 20s. And now we're like, these two people were barely in their 50s. They were too young to have passed away, where it's kind of the reverse of how we looked at them, you know.
Absolutely. In their actual life. Like, it's really wild to think that it's like one of those things where they started like their screen life started so late, but then, well,
hers didn't though. Like, no. Superstardom, yes, but like she was on Little House on the Prairie, so she had been in front of the camera for a while, which probably didn't help with the quote pain in the ass actress thing of it all, because she had been kind of sort of a child star, not a child superstar, not Macaulay Culkin, but you know, had she had found a little bit of fame pretty early. So yeah.
Well, and then also, like, the thing was, like, let's be honest, like I look at her now, and her being the way that she was on the set is all because of the fact that, like, okay, so, like, you know, Aaron Spelling, rest in peace. You were a shitty, shitty human being because you were exploiting these people. You didn't give them great salaries. We all heard about all the turmoil with the salaries. I can totally see that Shannon Doherty being the way that she was because of the fact that she wasn't given a, like, you know, you're in the industry for that long. You know exactly what happens. You know exactly, like, you're a kid that understands money because that's what they trade in, unfortunately. Flesh and money. Like, that's the saddest part about it. But it's like the stuff that I see that I had read about her, like, even later in life, I'm like, that's just because Aaron Spelling's an asshole and only didn't pay anybody.
I mean, he exploited his own daughter.
Yeah, so his own daughter. Who was literally 16 on the set and was making out with
her Brian and Brian Austin, Austin Green were the two youngest. I think they were both actual teenagers while filming was happening. So, it's a really sad way to start the day, but, like, you know, and, you know, just in a way, she did mean something, like, to both of us, you know?
Oh, absolutely. So,
it's, it really, really sucks. But, on that note, taking a sharp turn, so I've watched a couple of things that we have not discussed that probably weren't on your radar. One thing, both animated shows. So have you ever played a card game called Exploding Kittens?
Yes, I have. And I did see that Netflix has just released the their animated series called Exploding Cats. Very curious about it. So have you seen the whole entire series? Or did
binge-watched it.
How is it? Like, give us the short pitch on what, because Exploding Cats, the game, is just like I don't see how they, like, when I saw the thing come up on Netflix, the first thing I asked was, how the fuck are they gonna make that into it? Okay.
Yeah, it has very little to do with the game. It kind of becomes like the game at the end. So if you've ever played Exploding Kittens, like, there's all these weird cats in the game, like, that you can pair up and they do certain things, but it's the only one that ever matters is the Exploding Kitten. They don't really do anything with that. The premise for the show, it's almost as if the show is a prequel to the game, which is weird.
Okay.
So God has been, it's very preacher-esque. God has become completely ineffective. So everybody in heaven decides that he should be banished to earth in the form of a cat until he gets more empathetic to humans and actually starts helping them. Simultaneously, Beelzebub, the daughter of the devil who has died, also sucks at her job. And so they banish her to Earth in the form of a cat. And they are basically neighbors, like, in neighbor families. What? And yeah, it's very, very, very strange.
That is fucking strange, dude. That's very weird. So it's literally just two cats, one Satan's daughter and one God as they fight against, like, as they rival against one another?
Yeah. Like, so God Cat is trying to like find a way to help these humans, and mm-hmm. Devil Cat is trying to find a way to be more evil and just like constantly get in his way. The plot evolves into this whole war slash treaty between heaven and hell. Like it is oddly a lot like Preacher.
That's what it's sounding like, dude. Like, I'm like, are we sure that it's not Preacher?
Yeah.
You know? like that's fucking nuts, dude. Like, that's hilarious. It, like, I've seen the voice cast. Like,
Tom Ellis like, is the voice of God Cat, who yeah. was Lucifer in the show Lucifer. So Super. That's a fun bit of casting, and he's really charming. Like, but he's a charming guy anyway. So, like, it would be hard for him not to be charming. It's fine. Like, the first few episodes I had a lot of fun with, but it kind of, mm-hmm. like, loses itself in the, like, heaven-hell plotline and this need to try to justify where all these other cats come from. I mean, spoilers for a goofy-ass show, they wind up hooking up and Beelzebub gets pregnant, and at the end of the 8 episodes or 9 episodes, gives uh-huh. birth to like all these weird ass cats. So,
that's
where all the cats come from.
And they're exploding because of the fact that they're the spawn of God Cat, Devil Cat. Like, I can only imagine that
basically.
What it's going to be. And I do love the fact that they call, like, God Cat is just called God Cat, and yeah. Devil Cat is called Devil Cat. Like, exactly what you would call them if you saw them on the street. Like, if you saw a great little kitten, like, you go, oh, it's like a God Cat. Or, oh my God, you're the Devil Cat. You are a Devil Cat.
The best joke in the show. So, mm-hmm. the creators of this game also have another game called I think it's called Unstable Unicorns or something like that.
Okay.
They constantly reference the other game because unicorns just randomly show up and something fucked up always happens to them. Like, for no reason at all. That's probably the best joke in the show because it just always seemingly comes out of nowhere. It's a fine waste of time. It's not like anything on the level of like BoJack, where it's like there's something
deeper. More to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is an adult animated show, though. It is not a kid's animated show. So although well, yeah. the game is all ages, but this show definitely isn't like it. Like, I don't think it goes super hard R, but like it definitely gets into like maybe 13 and above, you know.
Okay, that makes sense. it's already on my list, so I will report back once I've seen it. It seems like it's a pretty simple and fast show. I mean, like, you know, who doesn't love a 25-minute animated like show that you can like you can take a couple in and it be all good.
And it's at the very least it's not offensive to mm-hmm. your taste. Like something like Velma that yeah. is just offensively bad.
Oh god.
Like yeah. at worst this is just like, yeah, I stopped paying attention to this episode and got involved in this game on my Switch, but whatever, I'll just keep watching. You know what I mean?
Where yeah, no, absolutely.
It's absolutely. Just like, you're not sitting there going like, why did they make this? Like, who is this for? Like, not, you know, it's not that level of, you know, at worst, it's just like middling. But I think the first 3 or 4 episodes have some really funny stuff in it. it just, the heaven hell plot just gets kind of like, oh yeah, you're just like, it's like, you took it too seriously. Like, you had to actually make it about something rather than just these two entities living next door to each other constantly getting in their way. It's out there. Funny enough, so Ripley loves cats, mm-hmm. and like, of course, I'm allergic to cats, but there's some strays in the neighborhood that she loves to try to play with. But I put the show on, and like, she was like, every time the cats were on screen making cat noises, she was enamored with it.
That's great, dude.
We wound up watching the entire show.
Just to make her not get all, like, you know, get all up in your grill over everything. Just kind of like, okay, you know, another good show is to put on the background for dogs. And I found it to be true because we tested it out, is Bluey. But Bluey is super, like, I'm going to be honest here. Fucking Bluey's annoying as shit. That little blue healer, Aussie blue healer, like that family of blue healers, it's like...
There are people that swear by that show. Our mutual good friend Spencer being one of them. Like, they were a Bluey family for a while. And they tried to show it to me one time when I was over there. And like, I watched like two episodes and I was like, yeah, I don't get it, man. He was like, what? I was like, it's just... He was like, I have friends who don't have kids who watch this show, and like, it's so great. And that was like, yeah, I don't get it. Like, maybe, but
I don't get it. I read about it, and Bluey is specifically like made in a color spectrum that dogs can see. So like, they can actually see the screen and see the dogs. On the screen. That's why they're so drawn to it, which is amazing to me that they actually spent this little Australian company that got like that got swallowed up by Disney, like, took the time and said, we want to make a show that's both for families and dogs. And I have this term, I call it ninny nonsense, because that's what it is to me. Like, if there's something that like goes on the screen that's just in the background and it's noise, it's ninny nonsense. And that's what that is. But I can tell you honestly, both my dogs, both Bowie and Fiona, when they've seen Bluey, it's the, like, does she do the head wobble, the bobblehead, when she gets interested in something?
Yeah, when she like turns her head sideways.
Yeah, like, she's like, what is this? Like, the ears perk up a little bit. That's what they do as soon as Bluey comes on. Like, because they see that, like, they can actually see the screen. Like, I know that, like, they don't watch the screen all that much. Like, you know, we have a big TV and stuff, but as soon as, like, I put Bluey on, if I'm going to be, like, writing a review or something, they absolutely, like, just, like, kind of perk up. So, it's a very weird
occurrence. I will try that when I'm going to be... Like, I like to put on shows when I leave, so she's not sitting in the quiet, like, barking at things outside. So I will try Bluey.
Yeah, and there's enough episodes. Like, I think that it's like 7 seasons and 40 episodes a season. It's like 300 episodes, dude. Yeah. So you'll never run out of TV episodes of Bluey. It was weird because like we thought that it was going to be over. The show is supposed to be over, but it looks like they're having more episodes. Like they sent a collection of shorts just out recently. It's weird. Like I know that I don't like, I like, it's just because dogs, right? That's the only reason why I really, really know anything. Weird side tangent for stuff. Bluey. Yeah.
So the other animated show that wasn't really on our radar that I recently watched is, Max, has a new Suicide Squad animated series called Suicide Squad Isekai.
Yeah. Which
anime.
Just kind of like Superman, right? Like My Superman.
So My Adventures with Superman is anime inspired. But it's definitely like straight, like there's only an American, well, I'm sure there's voice actors, but it's made with the American voice cast. So like if there's a dub, it's dubbed into another language, not out of another language.
This is
Suicide
actual.
Squad Isekai is straight up anime. Like it's made by an anime company. It's like written like an anime. It has subtitles initially. I discovered because I got it, there's five episodes up, and I watched the first two working out at the gym on like the stair climber and the bike. So, because it forces me to like, I can focus on that rather than the stairs that I'm climbing, which is better for for my mental health. And it forces me to like read the subtitles. But I discovered that because I couldn't keep up with the show, a week after every episode, there's a dub that goes up.
Oh,
So if you wait a week and
interesting.
watch dubbed versions, there isn't much difference. Like if you watch the dub with the subtitles on, you get the subtitles from the Japanese language track. And it doesn't exactly match, but there's not much different plot-wise, really. It is a fucking weird show, man.
Okay, so I was going to ask you about the style of it because, okay, so the studio that produces it, Wit Studio, I know them very well because they're the studio that has done a lot of the work on the first, like, I think it's like two or three seasons of Attack on Titan, which is a great, like, I love that show, but it's a very weird show. It's a very weirdly produced show. Like, even in like to watch, like, you want to talk about weird dubs, like watching Attack on Titan in subtitle form as opposed to watching it in like the actual dub, it's a very wildly different show, but it's also the same show, but it's also very weird. And so, like, is it weird in the esoteric nature of the characters? Like, are they redoing the characters or is it the
Oh yeah.
storytelling? Because, oh, go
So
ahead.
the like heart of the characters is the same, like Harley, Peacemaker, Clayface is one of the Suicide Squad, which is interesting. It's not like any version of Clayface we've seen. He may be closer to a like a current DC Comics Clayface, but he's very like suave and debonair, not kind of like a schlubby washed up actor.
Not Alan Tudyk, basically, which
Right.
is kind of sad, but also kind of funny. Okay, all right. So, like, is that the only character that they like recontextualize, or is it everybody from top to bottom, Neff to Strumpet,
No,
Amanda
I mean
Waller?
everybody else is pretty much the same. It's I'm trying to think of a way to, there's not a way to describe it. The Joker is in the first episode, because it starts with Harley and the Joker like running rampant in Gotham. It is like, it's not Jared Leto's strange version of the Joker, but it's real fucking close. Like,
It's like that. It's like that, like, unhinged anime character. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you've ever like watched an entire anime series. We've never actually had conversations about anime series,
I
but
watched
like, it's always
Cowboy
been.
Bebop and I watched Dragon Ball Z when I was younger,
Okay. Okay.
and like that's I've watched some anime movies. It's just it's never really been my thing. Like I've tried to get into it, just not really my thing. So I was like, well, maybe this will pull me in because it's superhero related, and it hasn't sucked me in. Like I do want to see where it goes. So here's the story. Amanda Waller finds a way to open up a portal into another world. And she assembles a suicide squad and sends them over there you don't really know what for, but you find out that there was a previous team that she sent over there who got captured and stranded. And it's this very, like, Lord of the Rings-esque world. Like, magic and, you know, orcs and trolls. And so they go over there. They have 72 hours to complete their mission and get back. But they don't really know what their mission is. they find Randall Flagg. He kind of fills them in on, like, what happened. You find out that Ratcatcher was also over there, but he's kind of joined the other side. They get caught between this war between, like, these mythical creatures and these, like, human people that live in that world. And it's very, very strange. That I brought up the Joker thing only because it was such an interesting take on the Joker. He's not really part of the show other than Harley keeps referencing him.
Okay. But
when you first, like, the introduction to the show is Joker and Harley riding around in the Joker's car. He steers the car so there's no steering wheel, there's no brakes, no pedals, nothing. It's a giant piano, and he plays the piano to drive the car.
To drive the car? That is so bizarre. Wild, dude. That's so fucking wild. I think that you just, like, at that moment, you just sold me on watching this fucking movie, or watching this fucking show. Because there's, like, I've been a huge anime fan for, like, most of my life. It all started with Robotech when I was a kid. And just kind of went from there. But man, like, something like that makes me, that's what I love about anime, is that there's always some kind of wildly inappropriate for Western audiences, like, thing that happens that Western audiences just don't know what to do with. Right. And they just reject it. And I kind of love it because it's something that is so Eastern flavored or like, you know, like, for Eastern audiences only. Like, they only get it. Like, it's like the cultural divide, like, between, like, you know, like, some, like jokes that just don't work for anybody else other than Americans, right? Like, I'm always fascinated by that kind of stuff. And, like, you know, an anime audience is just going to look at that and just go, that's cool. We're going, like, you know, like, a Western audience that isn't into anime will go, what the fuck is this? Why the fuck did that happen? What logic is there in this whole entire thing? But it's not about that, right? Like, it's kind of it's just like you know, random side tangent about, like, you know, just, like, adding into the fact that I just kind of love that shit.
I said Randall Flagg, I meant Rick Flagg. Randall Flagg is the Stephen King guy.
Yeah.
But I was looking to see what other, so Peacemaker, Clayface, Harley, Deadshot, King Shark.
King Shark
is probably, like, much like in the movies, the best part of all of it, because it's just this bloodthirsty shark creature that, like, all they're worried about is, like, they have to feed King Shark, because if he gets hangry, he's just going to start eating them.
Oh, shit. So that's great. That is great. Like, I do love every iteration of King Shark in all of the DC universe, be it, like, you know, animated or live action. I don't know who's better at King Shark, Stallone with his monosyllabic, like, single word kind of riff on Groot, or Ron Fuchs's over-explaining King Shark, because they're both fucking brilliant. I don't know who makes me laugh more, like, whenever I've watched either or of them, probably Ron Fuchs, because between him and Alan Tudyk as Clayface, they kind of make this 1-2 great, this great 1-2 combo. But how many episodes are in so far?
They just aired episode 5. So if you get caught up to 5, you have to watch it. I mean, most true anime fans will tell you to watch the subtitle anyway. But if you want to watch the dub, you can only watch the first 4 dubbed. When episode 6 airs next week, the episode 4 or episode 5 dub will be up. So I've decided to just wait on the dubs because it's much easier for me. So
especially during your workout time. Come on, yeah. Let's be honest. Yeah. Oddly enough, it's playing on Max and Hulu from what I see here.
Yes.
Like the stream, like they have both Max and Hulu, which is such a weird thing.
I knew I saw it on another service, but I couldn't remember which other one, if it was like Peacock or something. I was like, because I had been watching it on Max, and then I guess, I've been rewatching King of the Hill on Hulu, and it showed up in my Hulu feed, and I was like, and I knew I'd seen it somewhere else. So yeah, you can watch it on Max or you can watch it on Hulu. So I don't know how if it's dubbed or just strictly subtitled on Hulu. I imagine it's the same for both. So
yeah, probably dub and subbed, but just depending on which area you go to. Yeah. I always find Hulu is a very weird, again, we always get into this whole, like, you know, user interface crap, and it's always terrible to watch anything on anything. Just
because, honestly, at this point, I hate everybody's. Like, Netflix's is the one I'm most used to, but even theirs, like, it makes it so much more difficult to weed out the shit that I don't want to see now. Mm-hmm. I hate all of them now.
Uh-huh. I do too. Like, there's no good, like, and it's not even just the user interface. It's just, it's also like, there are things that I know that my algorithm should be showing me, and they don't, and I have to go and find it.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that about? Yeah. Like, you know, I just don't get it. It's like, there's no, like, nothing. Amazon Prime, Netflix, Hulu.
I didn't hate HBO Max's originally, but when they swapped to just Max and they changed some stuff, like I don't like that anymore. Peacock's isn't terrible, but since they're doing more and more live stuff on Peacock and they're pushing that, like, there's so much more shit I have to weed through to get to like my list or whatever, that's annoying to me.
They're getting prepared for the Olympics. That's why, unfortunately, I'm like, I'm both excited and not excited about the Olympics. But anywho, that's neither here nor there. But like, I know that that's the reason why, because all of a sudden they started testing out. I was like, why the hell are they doing this?
Yeah.
And then I saw that stupid, have you seen that commercial? Like, why is Spielberg shilling
for
the Olympics? Man, that was some crap for me. Anyways, neither here nor there. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to be on my podium, but needless to say, yes. Like, the live component and more like, okay, random side note. Have you seen how many games are going to be streamed this year for the NFL? An ungodly amount.
Yeah. I get it. It's great to have more access, but like, they've got to do better with the actual broadcast. Like, Thursday Night Football isn't garbage because of who's playing. It's garbage because they don't have any talent. The show is not well produced. Like, Monday Night Football is still Monday Night Football, even when the teams are just two teams you just don't give a shit about or who shouldn't be there anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's that's one or two Monday Night Football games where when they made the schedule, they bet that like the Jets had a bunch of Monday Night. I think they had 2 Monday Night Football games last year because of Aaron Rodgers. And then he was out after 4 minutes in game 1. And you can't change that. So, like, you have these Jets games that nobody, including Jets fans, really give a shit about. But, like, it's still Monday Night Football. There's still that production. Look, Thursday Night Football does not get the production. Like, they try to do all these, like, weird things. It doesn't work. They need to make it better.
And even worse, you hear this year they're testing out the stupid Al Michaels AI. Like, I'm not going to fucking listen to that now. Like, if Al Michaels, and Al Michaels is all for it because why? Because he's fucking, he wants to take his $10 million a year and not have to do anything for it. You know, because he's an old man and let's be honest, like, he the closer we get, the more it's going to be, Chris Collinsworth is going to be saddled back with Chris Collinsworth at a certain point, right? Yeah. And so he wants to be away from that. So just give me AI. I don't know. Like, it's wild to see how the live version, the live component of a streaming service just fails miserably. Like, literally the only place that actually has I know it sounds weird, but the only place that has a halfway decent live component, because it's TV and it's just a vertical TV, is YouTube TV. Like, I've tried the Hulu live TV component. That's terrible. Like, nobody has good live except for YouTube. But if you think about it, YouTube is the people that invented live streaming. Right? Like, they've worked literally decades on this. So they kind of know. So, like, whenever they have like a live thing or they like live TV, it's easy to deal with. It like literally looks like cable. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, we've talked about off air, which is that what, like, you know, of course, leave it to fucking Silicon Valley to rip apart a business only to rebuild it in the same crappy manner in which, but just charge more for it. Charge more for it. Like, that's like literally what they did. And I'm like, oh, like, I mean, we've talked about the fact that I drop services now for a time just because I'm not paying $300 a month for services. It's just not. So, but anywho, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I really need to reevaluate my, because like, I don't watch. There's definitely services I do not watch weekly for long periods of time.
Yes.
Like, and Paramount Plus being a prime example. But, like, there's such a, like, I forget that they're there, you know?
Yes.
Like, which is what they're counting on. Like, Netflix is the only one, and I think it's because of the fucking cost, where I'm just like, why am I paying these assholes it's like $18 or whatever it is, a month? Like, why? Everything else, like, my Hulu's bundled with my Spotify, so that kind of just does, I don't think about that. And then Paramount Plus is so cheap that it's like $8. I don't even think about it, you know. Like, it's same with Peacock. I think I pay for Peacock by the year, though, so I think I forget about it. And then I like, once a year, it's like $80 has been taken out of your bank account, or $100 or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like Amazon
Prime's the same way. Like, I pay for it by the year, so I forget about it, and then it renews itself, and I'm like, ah, shit. So which is exactly what they're counting on. But yet they've all kind of just sucked. Peacock is still probably, like, interface-wise, my favorite of the bunch, and one of the easier ones to navigate. But Peacock also has a component like, it's like Tubi or one of those where it has, like, you can go down to channels. And, like, they have their own channels, and it's just the Office channel. And you don't have to, like, pick an episode or
it just click continually runs, right?
And it just plays. Like, I've been putting it on the Modern Family channel and just letting that go. So I appreciate that part of Peacock. Like, I don't think any of the other major ones has. Well, Paramount Plus does, but as we talked in the past, Paramount Plus is the worst to navigate. It is.
Oh God, yes.
Absolute bullshit.
Yup.
Like, it is the freaking worst. So.
Yeah, it's just terrible. Just fucking terrible. But I'll say, like, yeah, like, man, these streamers, man, it's wild, wild, wild. Anything else that you saw from the week? Like, things that you were.
But so I hush. I watched all of that 90s show last week. I was going to bring it up, but we didn't get to record. It's, you know, right on par with the previous iteration. So,
yeah.
Sorry, she got a hold of something. No. She should. This okay. It's not yours.
Oh, God.
I swear. She's been sleeping for 2 days, and I'm doing something. And she's like, "I want to play."
Yes.
It's good. It is what it is. I did what I said I was gonna do. Bear was 10 episodes. That 90s show was 8 episodes. So I'd watch an episode of The Bear and then watch an episode of that 90s show, and then just went back and forth, and then watched the last two episodes of The Bear. Like as a whole, you're only about halfway through The Bear. So
yes.
No spoilers, but it's as intense as it ever is, but also treading water, like really, really treading water.
That's what my fear was, especially after, like, you know, and we'll get into, because we've not had a conversation about The Bear. It'll, like, once I finish it, it'll be like a very bear centric episode, because we'll have to talk about the first two seasons. And my, like, you know, my thoughts on it already halfway through are kind of like, I hope that it isn't going to go the way that I think it's going to go. But again, I'm going to hold my, like, I'm going to hold my thoughts about it. I will say this much is that they keep on getting more and more visually refined, which I love, but I feel like there's this fear in me that the visual refinement is suffering at the fact that the storylines continue to be like season two was peak perfectness in the way that the story was approached.
It could be one of the, like, season two is this perfect marriage of, like, visual storytelling and
writing. Emotional story. Yeah. Emotional storytelling, like emotional and visual. It's like perfect. It's like, I can't wait to talk about, like, things like the Copenhagen episode or the Richie episode. Like, it's so kind of like filled with this, like, season two, I feel, is like one of the most perfectly, like, realized versions of like not just like this TV, but like TV in general.
I don't want to say this season is like the show up its own ass, but because like it's still doing what it was doing, but like they've kind of, it feels like they've fallen in love with how they can tell the story and are kind of losing a lot to that. Like, there's a lot of visual flourishes in this season. Like, the first episode is a good example. Like, the entire episode is basically a previously on. Like, it just goes through everything. And, it's like, look how cool we can do the flashbacks. Like, it is.
Yeah, tomorrow is like, today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Done with absolutely no dialogue and just a fucking song that just creates tension. No, but you're right. It is a previously works, on.
But it's also like, okay, it keeps that same kind of energy throughout. And there's outlying episodes that are really fucking good. But as a whole, it just, it feels a lot like treading water. And I don't want to say I was disappointed, but like it did not capture me as a whole the way the second season did. Like the first season was rough when I started it, because like I'm just new to the Bear this year, like in the last 2-3 months. The first season was rough to get through, but like by the time I was like 2 episodes into season 2, I was just like, oh, I'm not stopping.
yeah, like 2 is this like 1 is like this like shaggy shape of like it's like an indie film, right? Like it really does feel like an indie film. It feels very small, contained, very kind of claustrophobic almost. It's what gave me anxiety so much, is like it was so contained. You were so forced to deal with these characters in a very confrontational way. But then season 2, it's like the difference between, I know this sounds weird to people that haven't seen The Bear, and we'll get more into this. I know we fucking just start. We love to do this. We love to like give like these half episodes, but this is the way I feel. It's like, it feels like the difference between Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Like Reservoir Dogs is still a great movie. It's down and dirty, but it's very independent and it's very independent minded. Like Pulp Fiction is like, I got a taste. I now know what I need to do. And somehow I'm going to put together this refined piece of storytelling that's still in the independent world, but it's like you're in the hands of master storytellers, and I'm going to just go along for the ride. And that's the way that I feel like season 1 to season 2 is. It's like that kind of quality jump. It's refined, and like a lot of it has to do with the fact that they got, I know for a fact that they got a lot more money. And then also they added, what's his name from Atlanta, the director and producer that, what's his name, works with, Hiro Murai, who was one of the primary directors other than Donald Glover on Atlanta. He was also one of the like visual, quote unquote, visual consultants. And I mean, just from the beginning of season 2, like you can tell, oh, no. We're going to go ahead and do this big. We're going to give you a budget. We're going to, like, you know, the camera package changes. It just looks more refined. It's like all around a more, like it's the show that you want it to be in the first season that it's just not there yet. And I just love the fact that like it's a show that's designed for streaming in a weird way, because they tell the story in the time frame that they feel that they need, right? Like some episodes are 32 minutes, other episodes are 65 minutes. Like other ones are like close to like a feature length. Like the fishes, the 7 fishes episode, I think is literally like 70 minutes. It's literally a film. It's a whole entire thing, right? Like in the second season, I think is it second season or first season? I can't ever remember. Yeah, it's second season. It's second season where fishes comes up. But
that's the Christmas episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
The second season. The ultimate episode. Like I feel like that's like the apex of what you feel like what the chaos of the Bear can be. I feel like Fishes is that episode.
Yeah.
The one
thing I'll say about this season and the show as a whole, the people that they get to come on board.
Oh, Jesus, right?
It's amazing, but it's also amazing that, like, I know they're recorded, like, they're taping all of this at one time. So those people aren't coming in for multiple episodes. They're coming in to shoot for a day, and they just shoot all their scenes. But, like, Olivia Colman is in a lot of episodes of The Bear.
Yes. Yes, she is.
And sometimes it's only for like a minute.
Yeah, something in the background. Like Carmi is drawing and he comes in and like she's just in the background and she's like, that's some great drawings. Maybe you should think about doing that more. Like, and that's literally all she's in. It's literally like it's crazy. Or what's his name? showing up. Mr. Glow Up himself. Yeah. God, what the fuck is his name? Adam Warlock himself.
Yeah.
Will Poulter showing up in like multiple episodes, but sometimes
like he doesn't even speak. Just see him in the background.
Yeah.
And like it again, from a filmmaking standpoint, I understand that all of that stuff was filmed at the same time and it's just the way it's edited. And that's great. But like a lot of the ego that could take over, like, why are you putting me in this, like, with no dialogue? Like, if you're going to put me in the show, like, at least give me a real scene. Like, don't just use me in bits and pieces here and there. But I really appreciate that, you know, that everybody's down for whatever the show seemingly needs.
Absolutely. Like my favorite cameo this year so far is Richie's ex, new husband or soon to be husband that shows up. Like, I was not expecting who shows up. And when he does exactly the kind of like weird uncomfortableness that I would expect, but it does it in like such a weird, like it was a wonderful cameo. And I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting him. And it kind of made me laugh. But also, like, talk about some timing, because he has a really big movie coming out fairly soon. I won't ruin the cameo just because of the fact that there are people that probably truly haven't seen this. Like, I know that it's like, it's weird because they've said that season 3 is like the biggest show in Hulu's history. But I feel like there's still a bunch of people that haven't discovered the show. And if you're just getting like a tidbit and you want to catch up with us, I don't want to ruin some of the stuff that happens this season, like that I've already seen. But it's like, I mean, it's like somebody like Robert Townsend in this show and how they use Robert Townsend and just like a welcome surprise and delight to see, like, you know,
every time he shows up, it's just like, oh man, I love that guy. The one you're talking about is the cousin, like the he's one of the facts.
The facts,
yeah.
But he's so not a fact. Like that's the joke of it all.
That's right? Where the haunting thing comes from, because like they're like, oh, he don't haunt me, don't haunt me. And I'm like, what the, like is this a Chicago thing? Like, what the hell is haunting? And like, as the season goes on, you kind of get an idea of like what that haunting is. Basically, like pranking, but not really pranking. It's like a curse, but not a curse. Like it's a whole thing. It's one of the. Like, it's weird to say it's one of the best cameos in the show's run, but
yeah,
it's such a low-key cameo.
It really is. Like, the way they play it...
The Fishes episode is full of, like, huge,
quote,
cameos.
don't you fucking throw that fork at me!
Yeah.
Don't you throw that fork at me! God.
Am I wrong? Is the first episode show Carmi coming to the funeral but not going in?
Yes, you are right.
Okay, yeah. So there's somebody who's not a huge star who's in that scene.
Like, yes.
When he's out there watching them, it's...
Yes,
I can't think of the guy's name, but from Dexter.
Yes.
And I'm like, what the hell? Like, and then you don't see him again for a long time. There's an episode that he's in that I'm pretty sure you wouldn't have gotten to yet. I think it's towards the back end of this season. That explains who he is, why he's, like, more or less why he's there. And, like, it's interesting the way the show is able to do that, basically introduce an entire new character with no dialogue. You know who that guy is, and you're like, you get to spend like the next 3 or 4 episodes being like, but why was he in that episode?
Which, like, you know, I instantly caught and I was like, what the fuck? Who the fuck is? Okay. But I mean, you kind of like get this whole, like, once you get into the rhythms of the bear, you understand that, like, it's like this thing where they'll plant a seed and it won't come up until 3 episodes or 4 episodes later. Right.
David Zayas, that's his name. I think they did that with Joel McHale, maybe, like, early on. Like, yeah, you see season, him, and you're like, was that Joel McHale? And then, like, the further you get, the more you realize, like, who he is, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Like, it's wild because, like, you have to convince these guys to do this. Like the Joel McHale thing starts off in I think it's episode 1 of season 1, and he's literally in it as a voice and a clip, like literally like a flashy clip. Like, you know, it's the whole thing of, why don't you just kill yourself? That's what he says. And then it cuts to like Carmi doing something. And then you see who you think is a bearded Joel McHale with glasses on as a chef, and then it cuts away from it. But then slowly through that first season, you start to see him more and more, but he never has a full scene. He doesn't get a full scene until season 2. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, that's crazy how this show works. Like, how it works with those kinds of things, like, of like, how did you convince Joel McHale to go, yeah, you're going to be this uber dick chef? Like, think of, like, you know, whoever you think of as an asshole chef, but, you know, we're only going to show clips of you because it's inside of our character's mind. And, like, you know, he's trying to avoid, like, he's just an avoidance person. Like, he just, like, you know, all of his trauma is all embedded in his head, and it's all coming out slowly but surely. You know, it's like, how do you convince somebody to do that? Like a guy like Joel McHale. Like, especially in a first season where you don't have anything, right? Like, you don't have the show to show and go, hey, look, do this. This is what our show is about. This is how good our show is. It's crazy.
I will say this. If you made it to the end of this season and you're just like, fuck, I've got to wait till at least another year before I get what's probably the last season of The Bear. If you're wanting something that's maybe, I don't want to, well, I kind of close in tone, but definitely like in the vein of The Bear, it's a little more, it can be a little more raunchy. Christopher Storer, who is basically responsible for The Bear, his first big TV show, I wouldn't even call it big, but I've talked about it before, was Rami, which is also on Hulu. And it is fucking phenomenal. Like, it deals with a lot raunchier subject matter, but it's still really fucking good. So, like, if you need kind of, like, that fix of this kind of thing, there's 3 seasons of Rami that'll, you know, help you at least get a few more weeks into, like, the long wait for the next season of The Bear.
Yes, and also, so that you guys know, season 3 and 4 were filmed back-to-back as one long production. So it might be a year. It might actually be soon.
I mean, it might be early next year. So
yeah.
I can't imagine, like, you know, they drop it before early next year.
Oh, no. Like, it'll probably, at the earliest, it'll probably be, like, you know, like you said, maybe February. But more than likely, they're going to probably hold it off for a year to allow this one, since it's such a huge, massive hit. And
you don't want to step, like, on your own toes, yeah, exactly. MB-wise, right?
So yeah. MB-wise, and also, like you know, streaming numbers-wise. Because if you wait until next year, right, like, you're going to get you'll get the same thing as if you did it, like, you know, like, probably even more so than, like, what you did this year. Because yeah. then more of the, and if it is truly the last season, because like, you know, like you said, like part of the reason why 3 and 4 were filmed together was because it was such a hard thing to get everybody together for the show, because so many of, like, everybody has work. I mean, the guy who plays Richie, Ebon Moss, he's part of the Marvel Universe now. You know, he's in the thick of it. So
talk about a character that goes from, like, the first time you see him being just like, I don't fucking like that guy. I don't like that guy. To, like, by the end of season 2, you're like, I'm with this guy. Like, all the way with this guy.
The expo in 5 minutes. Yeah. But also, I think the Richie episode may be my favorite. It's not the best, but it's my favorite just because, like it turns you around and it's, like, this moment where you go, yeah, I'm on Richie's side. Richie's an asshole. Like, Richie was an asshole. He still is. But, man, I do want to see him succeed. Like, he, like, the switch has been flipped, right? Like, it's like, yeah. it's like this, it's like a great magic trick to watch him. And, like, you've never seen, like, for me, it's like, I've never seen somebody use a Taylor Swift song so kind of perfectly. Like, it's kind of wild to watch this, like, you know, this guy that you've hated for so long, like.
And when you start seeing, like, the stuff with him and his daughter, and like, it's such good character work, which is the thing the show probably does better than anything, is like that character work. Like, they all feel like lived, like the world feels lived in. Like, the whole thing with the facts is so weird and never explained, and
no.
But you're just in it. Like, you're like, oh, yeah. I mean, they're like, in the first season, like, does he work at the restaurant? Is he just some guy that comes, like, what the hell is this guy doing here? Like, he always wants to be involved, but, like, also he's the electrician, but, like, he's not always there. And he's known them since they were kids. Like, it's such a lived-in world, and they treat those characters like they live in that world. Like, there's no, like, hand-holding bullshit. It's really good. And, like, this season is fine. It is, like I said, treading water a little bit. But I think that's because they filmed 3 and 4 back to back. So I think it's the not having. I mean, you haven't gotten to the end, so I can't spoil anything. But not having to have a conclusion. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because there's another season.
Exactly. Like, you're leaving it. It's not even a cliffhanger. It's just literally, oh, you're just leaving me right here. Like, oh, okay, you're just leaving me mid-scene. Yeah.
Because you know that, like, oh, well, like, we have this time to wrap it up,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, like, we have to bring this season to a close. Like, it's almost like the first half of a season, rather than, you know, like, they call it, like, they started calling them mid-season finales, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's kind of, like, what it feels like. And it kind of sucks. Like, as shitty as the way season 2 ends, like, there is this, like, build-up and resolution. Not the resolution anybody wants. Like, it's very, like, it's a fucking bummer. But, like, all of that stuff resolves itself. You know, there's stuff that's still in the open, but, like, if it just stopped there, then, like, you can kind of see where they were going. Whereas if this were the end, you'd just be like, what the fuck? Like,
oh, shit. Okay. I mean, I've tried to stay away from spoilers, but
I don't know that there's anything that could be spoiled. And that's the other thing. Like, season two had moments that were like somebody would tell you, like, oh, wait till you get to the Fishes episode. Like,
yeah,
teasing you of, like, this is going to help you, like, understand so much. And, like, even knowing the cameos for that episode, like, still didn't really prepare me for the episode.
No, you don't get prepared for the episodes. The guy that shows up in season two, that Richie has the confrontation, not even confrontation with, it was ruined for me that he was in the show because they were talking about his other thing that's coming out and they mentioned it. And I'm like, oh, he's in it? Well, fuck, man. Thanks for fucking ruining it. But when he shows up, it's such a, like you said, like, it's not a, like, somebody could have told you, like, okay, so, like, I'm going to ruin one, so if you don't want to know, don't know. But, I mean, like, if you've watched Emmys or anything, or you're even on her fucking social media, you would know that she's in the fucking show. Jamie Lee Curtis as Carmy's mom, like, yeah, you can know about that, but, like, knowing it and actually, after you've seen it, it's completely different, right?
Or Bob Odenkirk, or Jillian Jacobs, or, yep. Like, knowing any of that doesn't really prepare you for, like, what you're gonna see.
No, absolutely not.
So, you like, I could tell you, like, all the people that we've talked about cameoing in the show or showing up in bit parts, and they're all in this fucking season, every single one of them. Like, there is not Mulaney. I don't think he has a fucking speaking role, and he's in this season. So,
like, that's funny.
It's all there. It's just like I think getting to do it back to back actually hindered the show. Like, for this season.
Because they didn't have an ending. Like, they didn't have an ending point. It just was like, oh, well, this is the next... Like, they literally... Like, it's almost like it was a book, and it was a two-parter book, and they literally ripped the book in half and were like, we don't need to fucking put an ending to it. We don't need to put a cap on it, or leave someplace emotionally. Like, we're just not... You know, we don't need it. To which, at the end of the day, when somebody watches the bear in a hole in 10 years, I guess, like you said, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, right? Because they're just going to go. Like, when you binge the entire show, it's not going to matter. The thing that the way they leave season three, it won't matter because you'll just go right into season four and it won't feel like what the fuck was that, you know? Like, why no conclusion? Why, you know, it won't feel like that. So, like, that's fine. It'll be fine once we get that season four. Like, there's not any part of me that's like, oh, they've lost it and there's no way they can get it back. It's all still there. It's just they tread water for most of the season, because they've taken, like, what probably could have been condensed down to one little bit longer season of The Bear and made it two seasons. So.
Because you're getting all the mileage. Like, let's be honest. Like, that's what it is. Because you're not going to have Jeremy Allen White is, like, literally the Gene Wilder biopic away from leaving and becoming a star. Like, I mean, let's be honest. Like, he's, like... It's weird because, like, I feel like I hate Carmy as much as I'm, like, drawn to him as a character. Like, I've never seen a show or a movie in a long time that takes an agent of chaos and makes him the main character. Because, like, Carmy is both the reason why things work and the reason why things implode. And it is fascinating to
and
watch
that. And he knows that. Like, that's the thing, is like, is it because he thinks that it's happening, or is it like it's weird. I really kind of relate to him in that way. So, like, is it my pessimism that's causing this to happen, or am I pessimistic because this shit keeps happening?
Like, so, like what I love about the show is that, like, nobody wants to relate to Carl, like, when you watch it, because he's such, like, you can tell he is the reason why things are wrong, right? And things go crazy wild. But you can't help but relate to him because of the fact that when has it ever not been a point where somebody has self-sabotaged themselves? Yeah. Because they just didn't think that they were good enough, right? Or there was just bullshit. I was actually, like it's wild to watch this show. Or like, be like Richie. Like, you know, you hate Richie for a lot of the show, but I think part of it is also because of recognition. Like, it's a workplace drama in a weird way. And it's one of those workplace dramas where you like The Office, you can see yourself in multiple people. And sometimes you don't like that picture because you were exactly like the toxic person. And you go, fuck, am I the problem? Oh, yeah, I'm definitely the problem. And it's just, it's fascinating how, you know, the person that is ultimately the problem in the show is Carm. And it's always Carm. And it's Carmy's fault. And the way that he never, ever, ever accepts responsibility for that. Like, he kind of does, but he doesn't. Is a
I think the end of season two is him doing his best to try to accept responsibility for that. Yes. But in the most self-sabotaging way possible.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, my favorite thing is Claire. It's a relationship with Claire. It's hilarious because it's the worst. You should not be in a relationship. Even though everybody is telling you should, it's gonna fix you. We all know, including that Claire's not going to fix it. It's gonna take his eye off the ball, right? And he just doubles down after, right? Like, after he totally sabotages it. To which I do appreciate that, like, when he ruins it, he's not really thinking about her at all. Like, if you think about it, like, after it, he's like, but what did he do? He brings up his non-negotiables. He basically decides, like, he's going to double down on the restaurant. Like, the restaurant is going to be the thing that he knows that he can do right, right? It's a fascinating, like, it's more style filmmaking than anything I've seen in the theater. Like, this is, like, this takes, like, it feels both, like, I mean, like, where it comes from, which is Michael Mann, like, they talked about the story, how, like, Michael Mann did the show, and you can tell, and you can, but it feels like 70s Mike Nichols. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, something that would have starred Jack Nicholson in the 1970s. Like, literally, Carmy could have been Jack Nicholson, or Jack Nicholson could have been Carmy. And because it's that complexity of character and that unwillingness to be what people call likable, right? Like, this is, I don't, like, there are a lot of shows out there that show unlikable characters, but they're not magnetic. So all it is, does that make sense? Like, at least for me, this show shows me what I, like, this show gives me what I want when you're dealing with characters that are, quote unquote, trash. They're just complex, right?
Right.
It never draws back from, I am very people. I'm drawn to these people, no matter what happens, right? And no matter what they do. And they do a lot of shit. I mean, Carmy blows it up, what, maybe 4 or 5 times in the show in the first 2 seasons?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it really is a wonderful, like, wonderfully written and now wonderfully directed show. Like, and performed. Like, you know, these are people that are going to be working, like, the cast itself are going to be working for 20 plus years because of this show.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to hear what you think about the back half of the season. There's one episode specifically that I think, there's a couple on the back half of the season. There's two that focus on two specific on two of the female characters that I think are really, really solid. And do a good job of like creating like that stuff that made like season two so special. But overall, it's just, I don't want to say a mess. It's just, like I said, treading water is probably the best way to put it. All right. So, the other thing, the thing we both watched to completion, Netflix's big summer movie, Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F, which is a horrible name.
A terrible name. Whoever thought about it, like Axel A, like Beverly Hills AF. I mean, I understand the joke, but come on, really? Like, I don't get it, dude. Like, why do we have to do the Top Gun Maverick thing for everything?
I don't know. Maverick is an example of how to do it, and it works. I say that I don't want to. So I think you and I have differing opinions on this movie.
Yes.
You. Well, I'll let you express your opinion, and then I'll say mine.
Okay. So my thing is, it's fine. It's acceptable. What I feel like elevates it more than anything is something that I haven't seen in a long time from a Netflix film, which is like the action and physical nature of it. It's not filmed on the volume. It's actually filmed on location. I feel like that's the Bruckheimer touch that they brought. But like everything else just felt like legacy sequel checkboxes. But once they get John Ashton, Judge Reinhold, and Eddie Murphy together in the last part of it, I feel that's where it soars. But I have to deal with literally 90 minutes of I don't even know what, man. Like, I was like really confused by everything. It didn't feel like a Beverly Hills Cop movie, and so. Ultimately, it's like, if I was to give it a rating so that people can understand my confusion, it's like a 6.5. It's like better than average, but it's not like a better than average, I'm going to give it a B. Like, it's not an 8 or even a 7 for me. It's a 6.5. It's a solid 6.5. Like, it's passable, but mostly it's passable because I was genuinely shocked at the level of action and the fact that it wasn't filmed on the volume. To which I'm going to say this. Why are the Russos spending all this goddamn money?
I was going to bring this up. I was going to bring this up. So I think we're more in line than I thought. I had more fun with this movie than I did with the Bad Boys movie. Like,
Wow. Okay. Okay.
I realize... It may, I don't, I guess they're kind of comparable. Like, this is the fourth Beverly Hills Cop. That was the fourth Bad Boys. We've had four Bad Boys movies in the time it took to make four Beverly Hills Cop movies, to make the fourth Beverly Hills Cop movie. It's been 40 years since the first Beverly Hills Cop, which is insane. Eddie Murphy is, almost ageless. Like, you can kind of see it. Like, he's definitely lost some speed, but like Axel Foley was never about like there is action stuff, but he wasn't Will Smith, you know. It wasn't chasing down a fucking car on foot. It's more about him, his like charm and everything. And he still got that. Like, it's still fun to watch him do that thing. There's a really, really fun scene in the interrogation room where Kevin Bacon comes back in and thinks he's escaped. Like, climbs up on the chair. And, like, that's really, he's like, yeah, you watch too many movies. That's fun. I wish that Joseph Gordon-Levitt had more to do in the movie. Like, I feel like there could have been more of a dynamic there. It's still better than Beverly Hills Cop 3, but, like, oh, it's God, a competently made, like, throwback action film. It's not going to set the world on fire, but it's also, like, not terrible. It's an enjoyable way to spend a Sunday night at home when you don't have anything else to watch. It's fun. It's funny. Completely fine. I actually think it probably could have made money if they'd have put it out a theater. Like, I think it would have brought a crowd, but, you know, Netflix doesn't really do that. But, yeah, while I'm watching this, and I'm like, I wonder what this costs. Because we know the Russos are getting, like, fucking $200, $250 million for the bullshit that they keep putting out. Because they made two of the biggest movies of all time. That's great. Nothing they've done since has been worth the shit.
It really hasn't. I mean, Jesus Christ, like, their shit is so bad. So if the interwebs is to be believed in regards to budget, it was between the neighborhood of $100 to $150 million, which, looking at the action, looking at the everything, it does make sense that that would be the number, right? Like, it makes a decent sense, because if we use Bad Boys, the last Bad Boys, as a reference point, this recent one, that one cost about $125 million to make. And they're very similar in the way that their action is, though I will say that the end of Bad Boys has a bigger set piece.
Yeah.
But I also think,
and honestly, to me, that's part of the charm of this. Is
that it's low.
I get everybody loves the, like, Bad Boys just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Of course, nothing's as big as Bad Boys 2 because they fucking invade Cuba. But,
yeah,
like, I get you want the big action, but it's such a dumb fucking thing. Like, I feel like Michael Scott explaining why the later Die Hards are bullshit and the first Die Hard is fucking brilliant. Because it's low. Like, he's not low riding a fucking helicopter, you know? He's just trying to get from one floor to the other. Like, it's why it works. And, like, the there is really big stuff. I mean, there's a big helicopter thing in this movie, but it doesn't play out necessarily the way you think. Like, it's kind of funny. Like, Axel's big plan is to have them fly away in the helicopter. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like, yeah, there's a fucking reason why I'm a police officer now, and I'm not a helicopter pilot. Like, I crashed the fucking helicopter, and I've lost my mojo for that. And yeah, like, it's I think a more interesting, like, play on that. It's not super successful. I will agree with you that, like, there's a, like, play the hits kind of thing about
very much
a lot of the movie, which I don't love. Like, they could, the thing Maverick does, Top Gun Maverick does, is when it falls back on that play the hits mentality, like, there's a reason that Maverick is still doing what he's doing. Like, they explain that. Why the fuck is Axel still doing this? Like, there's no way this guy is still, like doing what he was doing 35 years ago. Like, he's not, like, Billy left and became a private investigator. Taggart became the chief of police.
The Paul Reiser character.
Yeah. Like, but Axel's still doing the same thing because the movie needs him to. Not for any other fucking reason than the movie needs him to. Because he still could have gotten into the plot of Beverly Hills Cop.
Axel F.
without him being that same Axel. And like, it's fun to have that opening, but it also doesn't make sense that the characters has just been stuck in this thing for so long. Like, other than like, yeah. Well, he's Axel, so he can't ever get himself out of it. But yeah, I don't know. It just I would have liked to seen like more growth for that character. And honestly, if you're gonna quote play the hits, there's no banana in the tailpipe. Like,
seriously, like, you brought Surge back, but you didn't do the banana in the tailpipe to Kevin. Wow, that sounds very dirty. You didn't do the banana in the tailpipe like gag with Kevin Bacon. Like, I feel like you kind of missed an opportunity here, right? Like that's some fucking crazy shit. Like, that you didn't do it. Like, but also.
Like, why was that a bridge too far, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you like you brought back you literally brought back what's his name? You literally brought back Surge. You probably wanted to bring back Damon Wayans, but he didn't have a fucking he didn't, like, you know, his schedule was whatever. But again, like, I honestly don't know, man. Like, I'm very kind of weird. Like, it's weird how it works, right? Because I'm like, this doesn't make sense to me. Like, it honestly, like, I know it sounds weird, but like, the setup didn't make sense that a 60-year-old man would still be a police detective. Like, at least put him in the Paul Reiser role and then, like, have Reiser be the chief of police. Like, yeah. And then how he gets in trouble. Like, it's easy because, like, how does he get in trouble? Well, he doesn't like his desk job, right? And so he's constantly causing trouble by going out into the field. And, like, imagine him being, it's not like, oh, man, that's Axel Foley, the detective. Like, that's fucking the chief of police.
If he was still doing that shit, they would bench him. He would have a desk job. Like, that's the thing. Like, so, like, not to get into spoilers for The Shield, but like, the complete series, which I recently purchased for $20, I could not believe it.
Love it.
Such a steal. At the end of The Shield, Vic Mackey has a desk job. Like, I know that seems like not a harsh punishment for all the shit that he does, but like, if he's going to live, that's how you punish that character, by putting, like, if Axel keeps wandering the streets of Detroit, like, busting people but causing millions of property damage, you don't let him keep doing that.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. You, like, literally, you bench him, and then if he comes, like, this is the time where he comes out and he plays, like, you know, he's always been Bugs Bunny. Right? Like he's always been like that Bugs Bunny character, the one that, like, you know, gets into trouble, but like always manages to save the day because of the trouble that he gets into. He's a motor mouth, he talks so much, and that's how he gets away with things. But if you put him into that kind of role of the like, I hate saying, it's not the Elmer Fudd role, but it's the Elmer Fudd role, but he still wants to be the Bugs Bunny role. And that's how he gets in trouble in the first scene. That solves it for me. Like, that brings the movie. Like, I feel like the part of the bigger issue I had was, as soon as I saw he was a fucking detective again, and he's still up to his same old shit. Nah, this doesn't, like there was something in my brain that just didn't allow it to work. It's not like Marcus and, what's his name? Like the characters from Bad Boys 2, where they're still like in, like, they can make the argument late 40s, early 50s. They're in a semi-supervisory role in the movies. So there's this sense that you can make it, like, there's the leap, right? But the fact that he's not, like, literally, that he's literally a detective. And, like, it just takes the narrative logic out of it. Like, it just deflates it all for me. So much so that I'm just like, okay, this might not work. Like, at the beginning, it's very shaky until they start the action. And even then, I was like, oh, man, here we go. The fucking volume. But it's not the volume. And it's filmed at night. And, like, it's like, it feels like Bruckheimer from the late 90s, right? I feel like the biggest compliment I can give this movie is that it feels a lot like, did you ever see the Anthony Hopkins, Chris Rock movie, Bad Company?
Yeah.
It was produced by Bruckheimer, right? It's directed by Joel Schumacher. That's what I feel like the comp is for the level of action, the level of comedy. Like, that movie didn't do well, but that's not belying the quality of the movie. I loved that movie. It's shaggy. It's not 100% because, I mean, you know, it's like Tony Hawkins is in his like late 60s in that fucking movie. And he's still doing like shit in it. But it's like, it feels like that kind of level of action from Bruckheimer. And I say Bruckheimer because, I mean, Mark Molloy is Mark Molloy, but he is not Jerry Bruckheimer. And like, the stamp on this movie with the action, I feel, is the key here. It's like, you brought Bruckheimer in because the third movie sucked so bad that you needed the seal of approval. And I feel like what Simpson and Bruckheimer always brought to the Bad Boy movie, or not the Bad Boys movie, but the Beverly Hills Cop movies, is a clean, linear action, right? And it wasn't big. It was always kind of like, my favorite is still like, I know this is going to sound weird to people, but my favorite isn't part one. It's part two. Like, I feel like part two, because it's because of Tony Scott, but like part two has like the kind of level of action that I like in a police procedural. Like, that's kind of like the standard, right? Stylish action, lower key. Like, the stakes are not like saving the world. We have to get the doohickey. They're trying to solve a crime. And then,
yeah,
it's Bruckheimer.
I think we've just become so conditioned that, like, it makes it a little bit more difficult to appreciate stuff like that.
Yes.
Not that the movie does not absolutely have its faults. But I had a really good time watching it. It flew by. It felt like, you know, watching the stuff I used to watch when I was a kid. Eddie Murphy's absolutely still fucking got it. I don't know that there's any other, like, well, Shrek 5 they've already announced, other than Donkey. Yes. I don't know if there's an Eddie Murphy character that needs to be revisited. I mean, maybe we could get a third film in the
the Nutty Professor series.
Oh no, I'm not a fan of the Nutty Professor stuff, so. Okay. Like, I get why people like it, but it wasn't for me. But no, him and Nick Nolte teaming up again might be
48 hours.
Yeah.
Wow, like, that would have been
the last wild 48 hours. Like, that would be absolutely fucking nuts, you know? Like, but other than that, like, he did another Coming to America. It wasn't super successful. I didn't even watch it. So.
It's okay. Like, I know it's going to sound weird, but it took a lot from Black Panther. It really did. Like, I know it sounds wild, but like the whole thing of a king, like, you know, transitioning his power to his son, and the son taking responsibility. Like, it's a very much so like taken from that and The Lion King. It's very fucking weird, dude. Like, it's a very weird movie that probably should not have been made and should have just been left as this, as the kind of perfect rom-com from the 1980s that the original was. But it is nice. Like, it is nice to see Eddie back into his element, if you know what I mean. Like, I know it sounds weird, but it's like, I love the new Eddie, not this retro Eddie, but I do love the new Eddie that did My Name is Dolomite, that does those kinds of movies, right? That are not necessarily comedies, but the new Retrograde or the retro version of Eddie, the fast talking, funny, charming dude. It's like, I miss him, but it's so hard to get him to do like, you know, I was having a conversation with my wife about this. And it just like, you know, it's like, I feel like the last great Eddie comedy to me was Bo Peep. I know that sounds like that's wildly controversial because it's 25 years old, but literally that is Eddie at my most favorite, like the fast talking, but also the guy who has a lot of charm, like, you know, it's like, and then dual roles playing like more than one role. It's kind of like, I love it. It's Steve Martin. It's filmmaking. It's just a great movie. I don't think we see that all that much anymore. Right. Like we get the Norbit Eddie Murphy, which that's rough. Norbit is rough. Or we get Donkey, like the kid Eddie, the Eddie that just wants to entertain everybody. And I don't mind, it's okay, but that's not the Eddie Murphy that I came to love, right? Like that I grew up with. Like we both grew up with. I mean, we're of an age where, like, you know, Eddie Murphy was like the biggest fucking thing in the world for a long time, you know, for like what, 7 years from the moment he showed up on SNL to probably like probably Boomerang was the last thing that he started having problems with, right? Like he was like one of the biggest stars in the fucking world. So it's nice to see him return to a form. Like, and here's the, like, I feel like here's the quality indicator is that if they made another one, I definitely would see it because I feel like they would correct the issues of the, of this one.
Oh yeah, for sure. Honestly, part of me hopes it's successful enough on Netflix that they're like, hey, like, do you want to go again? Like, you know, here's another, you know, $150 million. You know, let's run it back. Let's do it again. Or like maybe they get in the Eddie Murphy business, you know, like, oh, hey, let's revisit again. Like I, you know, it might be fucking weird, but like a last 48 hours movie might be kind of fun. You know, like they had an interesting dynamic and that was his first film, you know. Which sounds weird to fucking say, like out the gate, your first movie's 48 hours. And, but I mean, he was already a huge success by then. So, it's Axel F is a fun throwback, poorly named. Like I wish Judge Reinhold had more to do. I kind of understand why he didn't, but like, you're right. Like once they're kind of together, even though Eddie Murphy is probably the only one that doesn't quite look his age, it does kind of feel like old times. The daughter subplot, like I get why it's there, but like I don't know, they didn't have a ton of chemistry to me. I do like the scene where he's just like, well, I tried, and then like you just kept shutting me down, so I stopped trying. And she's like, yeah, you're still the parent. The parent is always the parent.
Yeah.
Like I appreciated that, but it just, you know, for its faults, its faults are really only, like I said, the play the hits thing. Like you could have been a little more, taking a few more chances rather than relying on like, oh, this worked in the previous movie. I did appreciate that they didn't fuck up the music.
Yeah, well, the score by Lauren Bacall, like it's kind of great because it's literally, okay, the one thing I will say is, okay, so like you have the same four songs for all three movies. It's kind of weird, but I kind of love it. But also Lauren Bacall's like interpretation of Axel F is kind of like perfect upgrade, new version, but keeping the theme, right? Like, right. It's really good. I really liked it. I think ultimately, like, the person that this is a home run for, like, I know it sounds weird, but it's Jerry Bruckheimer. Like,
oh yeah,
like having both this and Bad Boys come back in a big way, it's like this 85-year-old man, this 80-year-old man, like, just came up, like, you know, like, he's like, you know, they're actively developing Top Gun Maverick 2. Like, I guarantee you there's going to be a Beverly Hills Cop or a Beverly Hills Cop Axel F Part 2, which is the longest fucking name in all of history. And a Bad Boys Part 5. You know, Bad Boys Part 5, Fast and Furious, because, like, that's the way that they're going with that one, which I now understand why they went that way, because you can't have two franchises that are basically produced by the same people, but, like, and the same kind of general concept without kind of making them very distinct, right? Like, Axel F has to be, because Bad Boys is literally a play on Beverly Hills Cop, you can't have it be the same thing that, like, Beverly Hills Cop is, right? Especially if you're bringing Beverly Hills Cop back. And so, like, I appreciate the turn now. I understand now why. And I think that the ultimately it's like, I wish that Netflix would get out the head out of their ass and actually had, like you said, I think that it would have made money. Like, it actually genuinely is a movie, which we've talked about behind the scenes about my distaste for most of Netflix's quote unquote movies. Like, I think we've talked about both the J-Lo movie that came out and the, what's her name? Jessica Alba movie. And
oh yeah,
like, they're terrible. They're terrible movies. Terrible. They're not constructed in any way to be a movie. They're just bad. Like, I literally sat there and the J-Lo weird ass music video 60 minute thing was better than her action movie for Netflix. Like, that's how bad that action movie is. And it's just like, to see them actually do something, but then again, that's not Netflix. That's Jerry Bruckheimer keeping it on lockdown, right? It's like saying, you already fucked up, like, somebody already fucked up Beverly Hills Cop 3 once. I'm not going to let you guys do this again. I'm going to take control of it. I'm going to do it, because it feels like this isn't a Netflix thing. This is, like, literally a Bruckheimer thing, more than a Netflix thing.
Yeah.
So, like, it just makes me want Bruckheimer to team up with the Russos and put a lockdown on them.
Yeah.
And, like, could you imagine if Joe and Anthony Russo actually were signed on to a Bruckheimer project? Like, that would solve all of my issues with them, because he would take away all of the stupid shit that they like to do and force them to make a movie, like a movie.
Yeah, not like you kind of need limitations, you know? Like, yeah. I get you need the money to do the things that the movie needs, but, like, there's so much, like, excess. And, I mean, how much did The Gray Man cost?
$250 million.
I mean, this movie cost at least $100 million less. And I was interested in watching this. The trailer for The Gray Man completely turned me off of that. Like, not to mention Cherry, which is like,
oh
yeah,
it's like that movie is literally like I question everything about the Russos with that movie, and Tom Holland too. Like Tom Holland's taste in movies. Like, I understand, you know, oh yeah, the Russos kind of brought you up, you know, you were their choice, but you don't have to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
You don't have to say yes to everything, because that movie just kind of proved to me, I was like, who the fuck is this movie for? Like, why are we, I know, Rip, I know. Like, she understands and she hasn't even seen the movie. So yeah. But like, you know, Beverly Hills Cop, like, I was expecting a disaster, and it wasn't even close to a disaster. I can say that much.
Which in and of itself is a win, right?
Yes.
Like,
especially, you know, nowadays.
and it didn't, I think it helps. I think part of the reason I enjoyed it more than Bad Boys is while this does feel like a grab at like past fame for Eddie Murphy a little bit, like I said, the play the hits thing, it doesn't feel like a I fucked up, I need to go on an apology tour. Like, let me give them what they want, because, you know, like, I got to win them back thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Eddie Murphy doesn't need that. So,
no,
like, even when he did need it, he wasn't fucking interested in doing it. So, yeah. You know, it's nice not to feel like icky about kind of enjoying it. Like, I do still mostly enjoy Will Smith. He's a fine actor, but like it felt like such a thing when they announced another Bad Boys, like months after like everything had kind of calmed down from the slap. It's just like, oh, hey, we're making another Bad Boys. Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're sorry. We get it. Like, you're trying to win everybody back and like, see, I'm not, you know, it's just, this just felt like, why not? Let's do it. Like, for shits and giggles. So, and like you said, it wasn't a disaster, which is a minor miracle. So, yeah, we both, it turns out we're both more or less on the same page with it. I thought you were way more down on it than you were, because you texted me about it and then I never responded. I was like, I watched it like that night, like last Friday. And I was like, we'll talk about it on Saturday. And then by Saturday morning, like, the dog had been sick and I hadn't slept and I felt like shit. And I was like, we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, like, I think that, like, maybe my text message had come out like a little bit too crass. Like, it wasn't like I hated it, it's just that I wanted more. Like, and I think that it really fucked with me that the first section, it was like, what is going on here? Why are we not okay? This doesn't make sense. Like, that's the whole thing. It was like, there was no logical, like, there was no logic in having this guy be this dude that is still on the streets. And because it's like, how is it effective? Like, that was the thing that I kept on thinking about that got fucking, like, that got, like, stuck in my head, which was like, so how is
it? It's literally there to be like, hey, remember when he did this in the first movie? Because, like, that's essentially how the first movie starts. Like, this big crazy chase that tears shit up. And, like, it's kind of like just, it's very much like what they did with The Force Awakens, where it's just like, hey, remember this? You know?
Yep.
Like, oh, remember this in the Millennium Falcon? Remember, like, and this is like, yeah, man, we got it. Like, if you'd let the movie do its own thing instead of trying to remind us of the other movies, it would have been even more enjoyable than it was. You know, like, if you had found a way to not evolve the character of Axel Foley, but, like, I bring him more to, like, his natural place of, like he is a desk job police officer. Like, he does just ride a desk, but, like, he also is still, like, out there doing things he shouldn't be doing, but maybe that don't involve, like, destroying a bunch of city property. Just him, like, trying to recapture his, you know, like, the high school athlete who's just like, I still got it. And no, you don't.
No, you don't.
something more along that line. But, like, I get why, like, you wanted to, like, start the movie off this big, glorious, like, fun thing. And, you know, it mostly works okay. So, there's a lot of really, really great moments outside of that where, like, everybody gets to shine. I wish some people, like I said, I wish Joseph Gordon-Levitt had more to do in the movie, because I think he's really fun. Kevin Bacon, like, the minute he shows up on screen, you're just like, wow, he's the bad guy.
Exactly.
And very much like in Bad Boys, spoilers for the fourth Bad Boys film, when Ian Griffith shows up on screen, you're just like, well, he's the bad guy, you know?
Him and Eric Dane in that fucking movie. It's like, oh, yeah, let's label them bad guy. Oh, good Lord. Like I'm tired of the obviousness of bad guys. Like, but, like, here's the thing is that they try to make it, like, they don't, like, they hide the fact that they're bad guys. And it's just like, don't hide it. Just show it to me up front. Like, you know, have the bad guy, like, theme. Like, do whatever you need to do, but make it obvious. Don't, like, oh, we're going to hide it because we've got 12-year-olds watching this. What fucking 12-year-old is watching these movies? Like, none. So don't be unobvious. Like, okay, so, like, as a side note, like, so, like, it's part of my problem of writ large of, like, movies. So I told you I watched If, right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Is that there is this thing in If where, so, like, do you mind if I spoil something, or
I'm probably not gonna watch it. I didn't hear enough of
good things.
It's funny, I've heard so much about the Pixar movie that I'm just like, I don't know if I can go see this because I don't know. Like, the first one wrecked me, but, like, If, I didn't hear enough to make me think that I wanted to see it at all, because I didn't think there would be any kind of emotional journey there. So,
oh no, there's definitely an emotional, like, dude, like, that one shook me, like while I was watching it. But I mean, you know, we've both talked about anxiety. And there's definitely
Inside Out too. Like, the first Inside Out, like, wrecked me. So, like, I'm like, Inside Out too, I'm emotionally, I don't know, like, it'll be a while before I see it. Whereas If, like I said, I was just like, I didn't hear anything that made me think it would take me on an emotional journey. So I was just like, I'm just not gonna. I didn't watch either one of them, and don't have plans to, for kind of the same reason, just opposite ends of the spectrum.
No, absolutely. So, okay. it's not a good movie. Like, I'm going to say it this upfront, guys. It is not a good movie. It is, like, I saw Quiet Ones Day One. Like I saw The Quiet Place Day One, and I've seen If. And John Krasinski has made a huge mistake. He should have directed A Quiet Place Day One over If, because If is a terrible mess. But one of the big things that happens in the thing is it. Okay, so Ryan Reynolds is this character, and he is supposedly the guide into the world of imaginary friends. Get it? IF. IF. Whatever. But the thing is that it's fucking obvious from the first fucking frame that you meet him and the little girl that he's taking through, that he is her IF. But guess how long it takes them to reveal it? And it makes it like it's a fucking Shyamalan goddamn reveal. It takes the movie, and this movie's an hour and 50 minutes. It takes this movie an hour and 25 minutes to do this. Even though you very obviously can see the tricks. You can see that he's not talking to anybody that's in real life. Nobody's responding to anything he's saying. And you just keep on going, okay, he's the, like, it's like those people that, like, people say, oh, Bruce Willis was dead the entire time. I knew it. Sure you did, bitch. Sure you did. You didn't, though. I know you didn't. But in this movie, it's very obvious. Like it's very, very obvious. And it's like, that's the kind of storytelling that you're dealing with. Like, this obvious kind of, like, when have you ever had a Steve Carell voiced character that was so annoying that you could not stand the scenes that he's in because it doesn't make sense? Like, even kids would get annoyed with this character. Yeah. Like, that's the... Like, and then the whole thing of like, what the purpose of like, okay, so like she's able to see all of the ifs, right? Even though people are only supposed to see their own ifs until you become adults, right? How is this possible? It's never explained. There's this opening 10 minutes that I was like, oh, fuck you guys, trying to, because it basically copies Up. Like, there's this Michael Giacchino score, and it's all about her losing her mother to cancer. And, but it's done in this chipper and cheery way where it's like, oh, don't worry, she lives, her mom's dead, but it's going to be okay. And then, so like, my favorite part is Ryan Reynolds' like imaginary person, Calvin or Cal, he's supposed to be a clown, right? Like, that's how, like, you, it's revealed that he's a clown, right? And he says that he was a clown, but Ryan Reynolds is never in clown outfit, right? But at the end, like, she thinks that all the ifs are away, and then she, like, really wishes hard and really hard and loves it, and they come back. But here's the thing, is that they all come back in their form, and then he's in a clown costume with no fucking clown makeup. No big nose, no big shoes. He's just got that sat, you know, the, what's the guy, the Americana guy? The one, Norman Rockwell. You know, like, Rockwell had that clown? Yeah. He's literally modeled after the clown from Norman Rockwell without the makeup, without the big nose. It's just the frumpy outfit with the top hat. And it's like, do-do-do, and we're done. Ryan Reynolds is not a clown, but he's a clown. I'm like, I literally got so upset. I'm like, why aren't you fucking... Okay, first off, why did you make him a fucking clown? Because nobody since the serial killer Ted Bundy has shown up, has anybody ever liked a fucking clown? They're fucking creepy as shit. Why did you make him a clown? But then, when you made him a clown, you didn't really make him a clown. Like, you didn't even do the fucking... The Cirque du Soleil shit. Maybe
he was worried if he put him in the clown makeup, it would seem... Maybe they filmed it, and they were like, oh, this actually makes it a horror movie, so we have to take him out of the makeup. I have no plans to watch this. That's disappointing. I think we talked about this. I feel like the only reason is that he wanted to make a movie his kids could see. And I get that. Like, I do get it when people are like, I have kids and they can't watch anything that I do. So I'm going to make a movie for my kids. So, and then it winds up being less than great. So,
yeah.
It happens, you know. Yeah. Eddie Murphy made two Dr. Dolittle movies. And Robert Downey Jr. made one.
So. One, yeah. who knows, maybe John Krasinski. And John Krasinski is in the movie. He does a co-starring role in it. And he plays her father. And, like, this is what happens when you give a dude $100 million in Final Cut.
Yeah.
And he's like, what I really want, and like, to be perfectly honest, that like after the movie ended, I was like, man, you know, there's so many different ways you could have done this. And here's the big part. Here's the big thing for me is it feels like it was not developed in any way, shape, or form. It literally was his first draft. Because if this was done through Pixar, they would have torn this shit apart and this first iteration. It feels like, you remember how like everybody's watched the Toy Story docs and how the first Toy Story iteration was terrible and they literally had to redo it, like the last 6 months of the movie, they rewrote it all to make it what Toy Story is. If is the first version of Toy Story where it's a cool concept, but it doesn't work in execution. That's exactly what this is. Like, and I'm like, for a guy who I really liked his work, I really like the first two Quiet Place movies are refined in a way that I feel like a director of first movies doesn't do. Yeah. But now I figured it out. It's the junior slump. It's not the freshman. It's not the sophomore. it's the junior slump. So I hope, like, to be honest, he needs to go back to the Quiet Place and finish what he started there. And then I don't think that comedy is his thing, even though comedy is his thing. I don't think it is. Like, to be perfectly honest, it doesn't.
Well,
like,
I mean, so yeah, maybe not directing it, maybe being in it, but not directing it. Cause like, he's not, his only truly successful movies have been his horror movies, because like, his other directorial effort was not super well received. So
have you seen that movie?
It is
a maudlin slog. Like, it is like depressing, and it kind of tries to bring itself off as like a depressing movie with moments of levity. It's kind of like, did you ever see the Sean Levy movie where they all sit down and they're grieving? I can't think of that movie's name, but I really like it. God, what is that movie? I know that what is it called? Is he the one that did that movie? I think it is. Do you know which movie I'm talking about? Oh, This Is Where I Leave You.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Oh, okay. It's a great, like it's a truly well-balanced comedy drama. And it kind of tackles the similar subjects that Krasinski's movie does. But with a cast that is, like, they're equally cast well. Margot Martindale is in the movie, like, in Krasinski's movie. And that's the kind of level of acting. But he doesn't get the tone right. And it's like,
He directed the brief interviews with Hideous Men. So he's actually had two films before.
Oh, that's Quiet true. Place.
But neither one were that well received. So,
no.
Yeah. And they're both, those were both kind of dramas. I mean, Quiet Place is drama, but it's a horror film. They're both horror films. So, and they're both fantastic. So it's not that he's not a competent director. I hate to be like, hey, maybe stay in your lane, but like, directorial wise, your lane might be horror films. So maybe stay in your lane. Yeah,
exactly. Stay in your lane, bro. Don't go to Boston. Like, whatever you do, don't go to Boston. Like, I'm done with you and your Boston. Like, you know, I already have enough with Affleck and Damon both going back to Boston. Yeah. I don't need this. But yeah,
so
like, it's all to say, maybe miss it. And plus, it's on Paramount Plus. You probably won't be able to find it.
Yeah. all right. So next week we have the Boys finale and the Acolyte finale. We've avoided talking about the Acolyte, but we'll definitely get into it next week. I'm sure we'll have some stuff to say about the Boys. You're only an episode behind, so
I just haven't watched this episode, though. I really do want to watch it because the picture that they're showing for the, like, you know, the episode is now available. When I saw that shit and I saw what they did to Homelander and it looks like it's in his mind, in the kid's mind, holy shit, I need to see it because it reminds me of like my favorite Angel episode. We will see how that goes. But I mean, you know, the Boys is running on all six cylinders right now.
Yeah, it's a really good episode. So,
okay.
The Acolyte, I will... Yeah. We'll talk about the Acolyte next week. In a couple of weeks, we've got Deadpool. I imagine our Deadpool will probably be the entire show. But we'll see. All right. So until then, you can find everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read my writing and Adam's writing over at his website.
TheMovieAisle.com, where I've got a ton of home video releases that I've been in 4K heaven recently. Like, there's just been all the 4Ks that I've been reviewing. The most recent on Friday, I reviewed And I'd never seen it before, dude. Like, I've never seen Phantoms, yo. I've never seen it. And, like, it was my first, like, experience with it. And so you guys will have to read the review of it to, like, understand where I was like, what the shit is this? Like, I was nice to it, but, like, you know, it's very much so, like I now understand why Jay from Jay at Silent Bob said that he loved Ben Affleck.
Yeah, the bomb in Phantom, Joe.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was a rough ride. And it got a 4K release. That's what I don't understand. Like, I'm mystified at how beautiful this movie looks on disc, but how terrible a movie it is. But, yeah, there's all that stuff and more on the site, movieowl.com. You can go ahead and go there. We also forgot that another Legacy sequel is out next week, and maybe we might be able to get to see it. Maybe we won't. Twisters.
Yeah, I kind of want to see it, but I don't know if I'll make it. So we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we go, so you're talking about 4Ks. So what is your opinion on do you have Ripley is chewing on something. So Amazon right now has the Toxic Avenger 4K collection, mm-hmm. like the entire series.
Yes.
For like they have it's marked like 60% off, and then they have an extra 30% off. So the entire set is $50.
Okay, so I actually wrote
it's a $140 set.
Yes. Yes. So like I wrote a review of it. Like I wrote a review of the entire set, which consists of the first four Toxic Avengers. I don't think that there's any other ones.
There's the new one coming out.
Yes, there's the new one that still doesn't have a release date, which I'm like, wow, that's kind of crazy. I will say this much. For anybody that is a fan of the Toxic Avenger, like, these transfers are fucking wild, dude. They're so good. Like, really good in a way that you don't expect them to be. And then, of course, they have all of the special features. But I should tell people this is that there's no new special features. There's just the old ones from all of the discs from prior. But, and here's the big but, if you're a Troma fan and you've bought those things, you'll know how many special features there are on those discs. They're stacked. But the transfers, impressed. Very, very impressed. Even with the digitally shot ones, because they do have digitally shot ones. But the first one, the one that everybody cares about, it looks fantastic. It looks fan-fucking-tastic.
I kind of hoped that it would include the Toxic Crusaders TV show.
Oh, animated show? Well,
yeah.
You can actually watch that for free on Troma's streaming channel. And they actually do make mention of that, which is kind of great. I almost wonder because, like, Lloyd Kaufman is known to be notoriously cheap. And if he doesn't think that he can make a bunch of money off of something, he won't do it. And the whole thing was that, I mean, and he was proven right, that the Toxic Avenger box set would make numbers. So I'm almost wondering if it's one of those things where he was like, if I include it, it would be too much money. And if I make a single release, like, on DVD or on Blu-ray, it won't make any money. Like, right. I honestly wonder if that's the case. But that being said, the TV series. I think I love the TV series more, and that's what I remember more.
Same way with the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. I remember the cartoon, and I love the cartoon.
The cartoon and the second one with George Clooney. Yeah. Those are the things that I remember. The first one, when I resaw it with, like, I think Arrow did a release of it, I was genuinely shocked that I know I had seen it. I'd seen it. I know I had saw it, but I didn't realize that it wasn't the thing that I thought was the Killer Tomatoes. I literally thought it was part two and the animated series, because the first one is so low budget, so terrible. So yeah, no, absolutely.
I might get that Toxic Crusader set.
I'm like,
that's so cheap, man.
It really is. And for the value, if you're a special features person, if you're like that kind of person, then absolutely 150% that this set is going to, and you've never seen the special features, it's done like the Troma shit. So it's done very wild and inappropriate. But yeah, I would definitely say if that's the case, if it's under $50, it'd definitely be worth it. Definitely. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we will be back next week, definitely talking Star Wars and the boys and possibly some other things. So, we'll see you guys then.
Talk to you guys soon.
Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but they're really all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.